darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III, and I want to first of all say thank you for allowing me to accompany you on your journey as you move or make your way, most of you, many of you, from your part-time job to your full-time job. What you ask is the part-time job? Well, whatever it is you do outside of your home to generate income. I know some of you may generate your income with a home-based business of some sort. But what you do outside of your home, I refer to as your part-time job. What you do full-time is what you do inside of your home. It's very simply is a way for me to remind you that the first ministry that each and every follower of the Lord Jesus Christ is called to is to the ministry in the home. All too often, many of us sacrifice our families on the altar of external faithfulness and fruitfulness, only to realize after it's much too late. And this is the thing. All sin is the same, but sin has varying consequences. All sin is the same in terms of its eschatological consequences, but sin has different consequences in time. For example, negligence in a life when you have young children, you know, ages 5 to 10, you don't get those years back. And I know that's a sobering thought for some of us. And yes, the Lord is a redeemer and he is a restorer. But the facts are, you don't get an opportunity to redo ages 5 through 10. I'm just using that as an example. So my encouragement is now to make sure that we are discharging faithfulness in the home as well as outside of the home. It's very easy in our modern times where there's this tendency to internalize worldly standards to where we elevate things like promotions or Fortune 500 companies or generating $1 million or generating $1 billion or $1 trillion. But we don't realize that the Lord doesn't measure success the way that the world does. You know, the Lord doesn't use a Forbes 500 list or a Forbes list to determine, you know, who's going to enter into eternal life. You know, the Lord evaluates differently. So my encouragement is that for the time, especially those of you who have young children in your families and under your authority, to make sure that they are getting the type of discipleship-centered attention that is necessary. And I say all the time, and I learned this, quantity of time gives rise to quality of time. You can't pre-program those pivotal moments. You know what I mean? You can't say, okay, I'm going to fit you in. Use my own son's name, Christian. I'll fit you in, Christian, at 5:45 for that deep conversation about the theological truths. You can't do that. What I found is that quantity of time gives rise to quality of time. It's, you know, through those things, just I've shared before, my son and I, this is something he initiated, quite frankly. He likes to play chess. And I've learned just by spending time with him that one of the best ways to communicate to his heart is while we're playing chess. You know, we were playing the other night, and I had to out-fellowship him. That's a super church way of saying I beat him. But we were talking about how in chess, you have to make your moves in light of your ultimate goal. You can't be so consumed with your immediate move that you can't see the next moves you want to make down the line, nor are you able to see your opponent's counter moves. And I said, man, it's very similar to the way we do life. You know, and fulfilling the Lord's calling on our lives. I use myself for an example. If you know that God is calling you to be a lawyer, then you probably will need to put yourself in a position where you develop studies where you consume literary information at large quantities, and you're able to dissect them and digest them, and communicate with the verbiage entails. I know I'm taking a long time to tell a short story, but the overarching point that I'm making is that you won't be able to get those years back. And so we have to reprogram ourselves not to live with this corporatist mindset, even applying it to our families, where we see a successful life of rearing children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, where we see a life where us as husbands, we cultivate our wives You know, I say all the time, the Lord called Adam to be a protector, but he also called him to be a gardener. If you don't know it, there's a difference between a gardener and a grass cutter. A grass cutter will chop everything down, but a gardener will be able to distinguish weeds from begonias. Y'all get what I'm saying? You know, a wife lovingly submitting to her husband within the throes of their family where they're reflecting, husband and wife are a living and breathing illustration of Christ's relationship with his bride, and their children are being able to witness this. You don't even realize that you are establishing a reality for your children to where you are providing for them their expectations. Your daughters won't entertain busters, lames, and counterfeits because they've had a picture of what a real godly man is supposed to look like. Your sons won't entertain charlatan women. You won't entertain, you know, the seductresses, and won't entertain, you know, lying women because they have witnessed a picture of what a godly woman looks like by having their moms in their homes. It's revolutionary the way that God has established it, but all too often we see family as minimal and as small, and we see, you know, the accolades of men and the affirmation of people outside as being far more important. That shouldn't be within the family of God, people. That should not be. Today, I want to start in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 13. And I'm so grateful for God's word, and I'm grateful for the way that he has miraculously preserved his word so that I and my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren will be able to be shaped by it. But I'm also grateful for the people that God used to communicate his word to us. Man, that heartens me. So let me read the text and I'll jump into it. Ephesians chapter 6, I've said before, one of my favorite epistles in scripture. The first three chapters are indicative mood, referring to who we are in Christ. As a result of what Jesus has done for us, this is who we are. The second three chapters, 3 through 6, are imperatives. In light of what Jesus has done and has secured on our behalf, this is how we are to live as a result. And chapter 6, the concluding chapter to Paul's epistle to the Ephesians, which was an accumulation of believers in the city of Ephesus, which was in modern-day Turkey, Paul says this, verse 10, finally, after all of the theological truths I've laid on you in the previous 5 chapters, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength or in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, having done all, to stand firm. And I know as I'm reading that, there's some people, they get a little uncomfortable. Oh, he's going spiritual on us. Oh my goodness. And to my point about the Lord bringing his word to us in a particular way, that I believe that the Lord is even teaching us, providing us theological insights in the way that he brings the information to us. Because here we have the same Apostle Paul, who was a legal scholar, you know, trained under the Rabbi Gamaliel, the same Apostle Paul who's given us such a great heft of theological life to live under, is the same Apostle Paul who was so keenly aware of his Roman citizenship and taking advantage of his civic rights and duties to create an opportunity to convey the gospel at the highest levels of Roman government. It's the same Apostle Paul that's saying, hey, by the way, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. It's the same Apostle Paul who lived under the weighty persecution of the Roman Emperor Nero. It's the same Apostle Paul saying, hey, if you're focusing on Nero exclusively, you're missing the whole boat. I think it's amazing that there's so many of us, we revel in the glorious revelation that the Apostle Paul has revealed on theological matters, but we oftentimes come up faint when we refer to this. You can't. This is not like an Instagram photo. You can't crop out verses 10 through 13 in Ephesians chapter 6 and excise it from Apostle Paul's theology. Because too often, in my opinion, and I fall prey to this sometimes in my conversation on the air as well, not as much in my personal life, but on the air as well, Too often, we live as though and we speak as though there is no spiritual realm to contend with. We act as if the only thing we have to do, you turn out for an election and you get a voter guide and you do this and this, everything's done. No, brothers and sisters, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. There are spiritual forces at bay. Where I read a book one time, and if you listen to the program for a while, you know, one of the things that the Lord has baked me in is prayer. And prayer all too often gets a bad rap. People think that prayer is just, you know, an escape excuse, as if praying will then remove you from responding to the author and finisher of your prayer life. No, man. You get battle plans in prayer. You get revelation in prayer. In prayer, men enter as mice and come out as lions. Sometimes prayer is needed for God to remind you of what he has done on your behalf. No, the Apostle Paul is saying, finally, in the conclusion, and it's interesting that these words precede the conversation about pulling on the whole armor of God. All too often, we have people that want to go into battle half-armored. Many of us, we have hefty armor in terms of civic engagement, but then when the question turns to, what does your prayer life look like? You're like, oh, what prayer life? What is that? Prayer life? I have to tell you, I know lots of people who spend more time sermonizing than they do praying. I'm just going to tell you, I think that's a bad formula. That's a bad formula because that is a life. Even though it's a life spent attempting to do good things. Remember 1 Corinthians 13. Man, you could have all these gifts. And you can go without the personal benefit of these gifts. Much studying and minimal praying leaves for a powerless witness. The Apostle Paul, the same Apostle Paul said, I didn't come to you to offer you persuasive words. For the kingdom of God is not of mere talk, but in power. But some of us want to wipe that out. That's not in the Bible. Where do you think that power comes from? It doesn't come from Apostle Paul much studying. If you remember, his studying led him to persecute the Lord's church. So, Abraham, you mean to tell me I could be well-learned and on the wrong side of the fence? Absolutely. Now, is that an excuse not to study? No. The same Apostle Paul says, study to show yourself approved. The bottom line is what I'm saying here is that, I'll say it the way Jesus said it first, then I'll put my Abe spin on it. He is the vine. We are the branches. Apart from him, we can do no thing. Imagine, and this is the same word picture I shared with my children. My oldest daughter, she's very visual. I said, baby, when do you think the leaves in the fall become crunchy? This is a very simple illustration. She said, well, daddy, they become crunchy when they fall off the tree. I said, why do you think so? She said, well, this is what my six-year-old daughter said. She said, well, daddy, the leaves, this is what she said, are an extension of the life of the tree. I sat back in my car. I said, wait a minute. We were in my truck. I said, say that again. She said, daddy, the leaves are an extension of the life. But the leaves aren't the life. I pulled that car on the side of the road. I almost wanted to say, like, Jesus, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, child. I said, baby girl, you are so right. The leaves are an extension of the life of the tree, but they are not the life. Apart from the tree, the leaves can do nothing. Apart from the vine, the branches can do nothing. You could have the best, what do you want to call it with some of the fancy vacuum cleaner today? The best one that you ever could imagine. But if you don't plug that bad boy up, as shiny as it is and as expensive as it may be, you're not getting any vacuuming power going. The very simple communication I want to offer you today is that in the midst of everything that's happening around you, in your personal life, in your professional life, in your family life, what's happening publicly in our political conversation, I want to remind you of the words of Apostle Paul. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against spiritual wickedness in high places. If we're people of much anxiety, of much worrying, much reading, much learning, but little praying, we are much to be pitied. Some of us, and I learned this as a young man, I'm very busy, I have lots to do. But you know what? I'm too busy not to pray. I have so many things that I have to do, I cannot afford to approach them without
prayer.
Saving both lives and money. I am Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. Just last year, Crisis Pregnancy Centers gave away more than $6 million worth of free pregnancy tests. They also provided $25 million in free consulting and more than $100 million worth of free ultrasounds. They not only help save lives of unborn babies and women, but they are also saving communities millions of dollars each year. In total, these centers served 2 million people and saved communities $161 million. About 75,000 people, including medical personnel, volunteered last year alone. Liberty Counsel recognizes that each of these people are on the front lines of helping unborn children and their mothers. Our goal is to provide them with legal support so that they can focus on being a testimony to love in action. Visit our website at lc.org to learn more about how you can join us to advance the sanctity of human life. That's lc.org.
Who is God?
What's He like?
How can we know?
Your answer to these questions will impact your worship, discipleship, apologetics, and evangelism. Learn from Ravi Zacharias, Josh McDowell, Chip Ingram, and more than 60 other speakers at Southern Evangelical Seminary's 25th Annual National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 12th and 13th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Homeschool, skeptic, and group discounts are available. Pre-registration ends October 9th at ses.edu.
We need you to call your senators today. Tell them to put an end to the Liberals' filibuster, switch to a majority vote, and defund Planned Parenthood. Your call will make a difference. Call the Capitol switchboard at 202-224-3121 or go to afaaction.net. Again, call 202-224-3121 and tell your senators to switch to a majority vote and defund Planned Parenthood.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Brett Kavanaugh's accusers have betrayed the reality that they know nothing about the American system of justice crafted by the founders in our Constitution. In our system of justice, the burden of proof always rests on the accuser, whether the accuser is a prosecutor or someone like Ms. Christine Blasey Ford. The accuser must present actual evidence that his accusations have merit. Only then does the defense have a duty to respond. In Kavanaugh's case, no evidence of any kind has been presented to the Senate or to the public by his accuser. None. Everyone she has cited in support say they have no knowledge of the events she describes. She has completely failed to satisfy the burden of proof. It's time to vote and get Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. And I have to tell you guys, I promise I did not intend to spend so much time talking about these Kavanaugh hearings, but it's important, and it seems like a new development is happening every day. So I felt compelled as a result of introducing the story to make sure that I'm up to date as much as possible with the facts that's happened. So today, this morning, as I told you before, the initial allegations by Blasey Ford, then by Deborah Ramirez, we went through those at length, and now, I mentioned yesterday the anonymous allegations at the time offered by Michael Avenatti, who was the attorney for the porn actress Stormy Daniels, who said that he had a quote credible witness unquote who had allegations of her own. Well, this morning, Michael Avenatti brought his witness, who is now his client. And he didn't bring her. He went on The View to reveal this late-breaking information and the identity of his client. And so right there, you got to think, wait a minute, so you're going on The View to do this? Which, of course, if you know, the largest demographic of viewers for The View are, you know, of women. So clearly the objective is to stir up public sentiment concerning these latest accusations. Well, it was done in the form of an affidavit purportedly including allegations made by a woman by the name of Julie Swetnick, who is 55 years old. That is a point that's important, and I'll tell you why in a moment. 55 years old. Brett Kavanaugh is 53 years old. Again, that's a point, a reason why I'm making that point, where Michael Avenatti revealed what he describes as allegations. But I want you to hear for yourself what Avenatti said, and you ask yourself, is she accusing Brett Kavanaugh of doing something to her? If you would, Jay, please play clip number one.
Did he do anything to this particular woman, Julie Swetnick, or is she alleging that she just has seen him be aggressive with other women?
Well, I think the allegations, Sonny, if you read further in the declaration, are far more specific relating to Brett Kavanaugh's conduct towards women in general, including the attempts to drug women by placing grain alcohol and or drugs in basically the punch at these parties, that many of these women ended up gang raped, unfortunately. I mean, the details in this declaration are specific. They are shocking, but above all else, they are true. And my client stands behind them 100%.
Okay, so you heard the question. That question was asked by The View's co-host, Sonny Hostin, who is an attorney as well. Before she went into TV, I believe she practiced law. Identifies herself as an attorney. I guess we might have to revisit how we even say those things. But you heard Michael Avenatti's answer to the question, is this accuser saying Brett Kavanaugh did anything to her? His non-answer concerning that provoked a follow-up question to where the question was doubled down on. Did anything happen to her? Please play clip number two.
What specifically did Judge Kavanaugh do to your client?
Well, again, I'm going to stand on the exact language in the declaration. It's laid out in detail in the declaration. There's a reason why it's laid out in the declaration, and we're not going to provide any additional comment on that exact question until the coming days.
Aha! So you, many of you, at Ultimate Dodgeball, many of you have probably are having the same expressions of your face at the moment that Jason has on his face. I don't think your question can be asked more simply. Is your client accusing Brett Kavanaugh of doing something to her? Short answer, no. I have in my hand the affidavit that Michael Avenatti is referring to as the declaration of his client. So in the declaration, or in the affidavit, this woman, Julie Swetnick, and I really could spend about an hour taking this affidavit apart, but I'll just do some highlights for the sake of the timing of the program because I want to get to some calls as well. But the allegations in the affidavit are that Julie Swetnick, between the years of 1981 and 1983, that she was a part of a high school party scene, which is important to note that in 81, Brett Kavanaugh was about 15 years old. All right? she was a part of a high school party scene in the Maryland suburbs where she went over, and this is a quote from the affidavit, she attended, quote, well over 10 house parties in the Washington, D.C. area during the years of 1981 and 1983 where Mark Judge and Brett Kavanaugh were present, end quote. She goes on to describe witnessing Brett Kavanaugh and Mark Judge. She seems to want to put them together, that they were drinking together. And Brett Kavanaugh and Mark Judge were involved in spiking the punch at the parties in an attempt to get girls tipsy. And then she even goes so far as to say that Mark Judge and Brett Kavanaugh were involved in getting women drunk so that, you know, numbers of men, colloquially referred to as a train, or she even says in affidavit to train rape or gang rape numerous women. All right? That's what she says. She never alleges ever in her affidavit of Brett Kavanaugh doing anything to her. She also says that when she saw the punch being spiked, it caused her to, and this is a quote, this is number 11 in the affidavit, this caused me to make an effort to purposely avoid the punch at these parties, end quote. All right. Then she goes on later on and to say, now hear me well, she'd been going to the parties well over 10 from 1981 to 1983. After she says she witnessed Brett Kavanaugh being disoriented, being inebriated, and getting other girls inebriated and disoriented, she still kept going to the party. Then she says in 1982, she became a victim of one of these gang rapes. She doesn't say Brett Kavanaugh or Mark Judge perpetrated any of this stuff, but they were just at the party. And she says, even though she already said, well, I avoided the punch, but how does she? Who knows? But she says she believes that she was drugged with Quaaludes or something similar placed in what she was drinking, end quote. Now, that is amazing to me. So now she's trying to tie in Bill Cosby allegations, who was just sentenced to prison 3 to 10 years for using Quaaludes to take advantage of women. Now, why, you ask, did I continually refer to the fact that Julie Swetnick is 55 years old and Brett Kavanaugh is 53? Based on Julie Swetnick's own resume publications, and this was something that is not merely Abe's opinion, the New York Times published, and I don't think they even realized what they were publishing, the New York Times published an article that stated that Julie Swetnick graduated from high school in 1980. So, here's a question that I have, and it's two questions. First, what kind of girl who becomes a woman goes to a party to where she witnesses other girls being drugged and gang raped, and you keep going to those parties? And you don't say anything for 37 years? Her own affidavit, she went to well over 10 of these parties, starting in 1981. The parties continued, and she said the parties happened almost every weekend. She witnesses this happening, and you keep going to the parties without saying anything? Then in 1982, you end up, this is her own, folks, this is her own affidavit. This is her own affidavit. And you don't say nothing for 37 years? Nothing? That stinks. Now, to add insult to injury, I don't profess to be a psychiatrist, nor do I play one on television. My name is not Dr. Phil, but have you ever heard of a high school, a young lady graduating from high school, going on to college, yet remaining in the high school party scene for another 3 years? When does that happen? I've never heard anything like that in my life. My only experience has been, has more often been younger girls wanting to go to college party scenes. So you mean to tell me, so you graduate high school in 1980, so 81, 82, and 83, you still hanging out with the high schoolers? Come on. Are you, I mean, seriously, folks, seriously. This is something else. I said before, this is a delay effort. This is a delay effort. This is why I said the Kavanaugh hearings over Dr. Ford's allegations is not going to accomplish anything, because as soon as they get done, the media and the regressives in government are going to begin clamoring, we need another hearing and an investigation for Deborah Ramirez's claims. And when that one gets done, oh, we need another hearing for Julie Swetnick. The objective is to continue to drag this out. When I woke up this morning, Senator Chuck Grassley said that he was open to a hearing for Julie Swetnick's claims. Since then, and time progressed, Senator Grassley's chief of staff revealed that Brett Kavanaugh has been questioned under criminal penalty, where he could face up to 5 years in prison for lying. He's already been questioned about Dr. Ford's allegations. He's already been questioned about Deborah Ramirez's allegations. He's already been questioned about what was initially the anonymous allegations of the whole gang rape thing, which Judge Kavanaugh categorically denied all of it, and offered the fact that they would also ask him specific questions about Julie Swetnick. And as a result of all those questions, they reveal that there's nothing more that any investigation hearing would reveal. So hopefully, and yesterday I think I kept saying Monday, what's wrong, and Brian, I called you Brian again. Jeff attempted to correct me, but I persisted in my error. The hearings are scheduled to occur tomorrow. I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again today. The Senate needs to vote on Judge Kavanaugh's nomination immediately. In fact, I think Senator Grassley, at the conclusion of whatever hearing happens tomorrow, or doesn't happen, because quite frankly, I would be surprised if Christine Ford shows up tomorrow. But if she does, whatever happens at the conclusion of it, Chuck Grassley, unless barring some, you know, huge issue, whatever, Chuck Grassley should immediately say, we send Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the entire Senate to be voted on immediately. Because the reality, folks, here, what's happening, and man, there's so many different things, so many different things I've wanted to say, I just hadn't been able to get to yet. But one of the things that's happening is that this is an absolute shredding of our Constitution, to where those who have antipathy and malevolence for our Constitution, they're able to display it in full rank or completely disregard any things, formal processes, and trample on it. Secondarily, and as I told you before, as a former prosecutor, I've prosecuted sexual assault cases. I do believe that we have to create an atmosphere for victims, but I believe wholeheartedly that this charade, as it's taking place on the national stage, it actually hurts the standing of victims. Because what is going to happen is that in the national consciousness, whenever allegations are made going forward, the first thing that's going to happen is, man, is this another Kavanaugh situation? That's what's going to happen in people's minds. And for those who argue all the time that say, oh, we should believe the woman, I have two words for you. Emmett Till. Remember him? Emmett Till was a young man who was accused of whistling at a woman. And because of the time period and the differences in their skin complexions, the local police authorities and the local people in the Deep South, they killed Emmett Till. And the woman revealed in her latter years that she lied. And we don't even have to go to Emmett Till. I got another two words for you. Potiphar's wife. Believe the woman? I guess Potiphar did the right thing in believing Potiphar's wife in the case of Joseph, right? Come on, man. That's why we should literally pause the reflections. I had a man who owns a company who emailed me privately, and I'm not going to say his name, as all these things were happening, and he was saying that, man, I don't think these people realize what they're doing, because those who would argue for greater access and employment in other areas for women who work women in public places, that you're going to find if this Kavanaugh thing is allowed to stand, you're going to find, unfortunately, less people willing to work with women. You're going to see the Pence rule expanded. I'm just telling you. Because if all that's all that's needed to literally for judge and jury to find a man guilty is for the accusation to be levied? That the women must be believed based on the accusation alone? And if you don't believe me, I'm going to play a little audio for you. How much time to the break? Not enough time. I hit a disrespectful music. I was going to play for you. Maybe I'll play it on the other side of the break. Ted Cruz and his wife cannot even go to dinner in Washington, D.C. because activists, I call them woke folk, did not allow Ted Cruz and his wife Heidi to eat a meal because they said Ted Cruz didn't believe what they described as survival. And I'm saying, whoa. This is not England. One of the main distinctions between our judicial system, our criminal system versus England And in England, when an accusation is made against a person, then they have to then prove themselves innocent. Here, if a charge is made, proof and evidence must be submitted before a person can be adjudicated as guilty. We don't convict people based on allegations alone in America.
Good news. You are not stuck with your healthcare plan. Really. You have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their healthcare bills, and these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their healthcare needs, but the needs of others too, and it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their healthcare costs. That is a life changer for people, so this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Hit *345 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. Message and data rates may apply. That's *345.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here, through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Back in 2004, the Federal Emergency Management Agency came up with an unusual way to determine the severity of a natural disaster. They call it the Waffle House Index. Waffle House is known for delicious waffles and hash browns scattered, covered, and smothered. The restaurant chain opened 24/7, even during natural disasters, which is a big help to federal disaster teams trying to determine how soon grocery stores and banks and public schools can get back to business. When a big storm hits, Waffle House opens a storm center at its corporate headquarters using a color-coded index to gauge storm damage. Code green means the local Waffle House is up and running. Code yellow means the Waffle House is up and running but only serving a limited menu. Code red means the Waffle House is shut down, and that means there's a pretty good chance your neighborhood is about to be scattered, covered, and smothered. I'm Todd Stearns.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. If you want to join the program, you are welcome to call. The number to do so is 888-589-8840. That number again is 888-589-8840. Anything we discussed during the program is fair game, whether it's the scripture in Ephesians chapter 6, reminding us that, hey, folks, we're in a spiritual battle. Don't forget, there are natural targets, but the battle at its core is spiritual. Or the allegations against Judge Kavanaugh with this latest coming from a woman by the name of Julie Swetnick. Another point I wanted to make in highlighting the age differences is that it's astounding to me that the affidavit offered by Michael Avenatti of his client, Julie Swetnick, includes her revealing that she is, that she was gang raped. This is what she says in her own words. She was gang raped at a house party in 1982, but by her own admission, she kept going to parties after that. She said she went to parties from 81 to 83. Prior to 1982, the affidavit reveals that she witnessed, punch being spiked and gang rapes happening. That didn't stop her from going to the parties. Then in 82, she suffers her own gang rape. That didn't stop her from going to the parties. She continued partying to 1983. Come on, man. Where's Chris Carter when I need him? Are you serious? And again, this is not an effort to belittle women who have suffered this trauma. We've had women call into the program who say they've suffered trauma like this. And really, I remember a woman who said she was raped 50 years ago or so, where she remembers every detail, down to the strings on a man's boots. I'm not saying that that's everybody's experience, but the issue is, whether or not you believe Kavanaugh or not, that's the reason why the criminal justice system requires evidence. Because without evidence, all you have are the contradictory stories of people. It's bad. Now, getting back to Ted Cruz, I wanted you all to hear this. I meant to get to this because I think this is important for multiple reasons. One, just to show the level of non-civility we've dropped to in this nation. But in addition to that, to show how this is, you want to know what cultural Marxism is? This is what it is. It sets the standard to where it now becomes acceptable behavior to harass publicly, to demonize, to dehumanize, and ultimately, as we see with Antifa, to use violence against those who you disagree with politically. Folks, these are the steps that precipitated Nazi Germany. We are in the 1930s Germany with this type of civil discourse. Jay, if you would, please play clip number 5, the Ted Cruz clip.
We believe survivors. We believe survivors. We believe survivors. We believe survivors. We believe survivors.
Beto is way hotter than you do.
We believe survivors. We believe survivors. We believe survivors.
God bless you, Kelly.
Let my wife through.
We believe survivors.
For God's sake.
We believe survivors. We believe survivors. We believe survivors. We believe survivors.
Now, imagine you were at dinner with your wife on your way to your table and you get accosted by that. Obviously, the audio doesn't allow you to see the scores of people. But why did the owners of the restaurant let that happen? And you heard how Ted Cruz and his wife remained calm. And Ted Cruz even said, God bless you, to one of the women. You could hear that. Did you hear how irate she got after he said, God bless you? Folks, this is what we're dealing with. This is not the conduct of logical people. Logical people. And, for example, Ted Cruz is in a race against Robert Francis O'Rourke. Some of you are saying, who is Robert Francis? Yeah, he's trying to call himself Beto. Beto! Beto is back! Well, Robert Francis, on Twitter, said that it was wrong for people to treat Ted Cruz this way. Then he got slammed by his own supporters, saying that when you have people like Ted Cruz, they're not worth treating civilly. They don't have the right to eat out publicly. They don't have the right to be free from harassment. It's time to stop being civil with these people. Y'all see what I'm saying here? So they are justifying this type of criminal behavior. In any other, if it's anybody else, this would be called harassment. But because it's Ted Cruz, it's okay? Because it's Sarah Huckabee Sanders, it's okay? Because it's Kristen Nielsen, Department of Homeland Security Chief, it's okay? This is bad, y'all. This is bad. This is bad. And since I brought up old Beto, like, this is so amazing to me. In the era where people are up in arms about cultural appropriation, they're gonna let this dude run around calling himself Beto like it's cool? That's what I'm telling you. The standard of morality for regressives is absolutely subjective. It is whatever they want in the moment. Just like they formally adhere to science as if it was the add-all, the end-all, be-all. Now when science says there's no such thing as more than two genders of human beings, two sexes of human beings, they say, who cares about science? It's all about how I feel. It's all about how I feel. That's because logic doesn't flow with regressivism. Well, Beto, in his debate with Ted Cruz, he was asked a question whether or not it was true that he was not only guilty of committing a DWI, which involved a crash, a vehicular crash, but did he try to flee the scene? And I want you to hear his answer, and it is clip number 4.
A witness said in that accident that you tried to leave the scene of the accident. Did you, and should voters be concerned about this incident?
Yeah. I did not try to leave the scene of the accident, though driving drunk, which I did, is a terrible mistake for which there is no excuse or justification or defense, and I will not try to provide one. I can only tell you that I was able to have a second chance in my life. What I do know is that as a white man in this country, there's a privilege that I enjoy that many African-American men and women do not.
That wasn't a question, Beto. Why you want to throw that in, homie? Well, I'll let you know why. Because the questioner had got Beto, and he didn't know what to do. He got caught in the headlines, you know, in the headlights. You know why? Because the Washington Post, which is no conservative outlet, in case you're not aware, they gave Beto 4 Pinocchios for that lie. Because you know what had happened? The Washington Post got their hands on 2 police reports from the crash incident in 1980. When was it? I have it right here. Where did I put it? Yeah, here it is. Yeah, 1998. The police report indicated that Robert Francis O'Rourke was so intoxicated that he almost fell when he tried to get out of his car. His blood, breath, alcohol concentration levels were 0.136 and 0.134. The reason why they have 2 numbers is because they give 2 tests. They registered a number twice. I prosecuted DWI cases up and down Texas. Folks, the legal limit of Texas is 0.08. The police report also indicated that Beto not only tried to flee the scene, but the witness had to detain him so that he could not flee the scene. So because of that, Beto was given 4 Pinocchios. And the Washington Post reporter said, quote, O'Rourke was so drunk, according to the police report, so drunk that he could barely get out of the car without falling. So perhaps he would not have gotten far, or he was simply confused. Perhaps in his memory, O'Rourke believes he did not try to leave. But given his BAC level at the time of the accident, O'Rourke's memory 20 years after the fact is not nearly as credible as the police reports written just hours after the accident. Now, the question I have for all my Texas listeners, and I know there are a lot of people listening in Texas, is that kind of person you want in the Senate? He could have simply said, man, yeah, I crashed. I was intoxicated. The police reports, he could have said it just like that. The police reports reflect that I tried to leave the scene. It was a mistake that I made. Thank God that this is the United States of America where second chances are afforded to people and going on to this thing. But no, he denied it, flat out denied it. This wasn't an argument about policy where you have certain facts that support your argument versus your opponent. This is a simple factual assessment that I believe that he wasn't prepared to answer, which is why, in case of emergency, what do? Lie. I think that was a revelation of his character. That's what I believe. Now, you make your own assessment, but if you, under pressure, will offer that up, because you're not prepared for the question, I think it's very telling. Very telling. To the phone lines, we go. First, we'll go to Alabama where Joe is on the line. Joe, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Brother, I have been listening to you, but I have been working so much and not able to call, and I do apologize.
Oh, it's all right, Joe. No problem at all. I'm glad you're listening and calling today.
As we say in the country, I have to make hay while the sun's shining, hey, brother, okay?
Hey, amen.
Listen, you're my intellectual friend, remember?
I remember you and very well, Joe.
I got some questions to bounce off of you, and I need you to let me know whether or not these are good questions, okay? Senator Feinstein ignored this lady. Why can't all of us?
Mm.
Is that a good question?
That's a great question.
Oh, thanks, brother. I appreciate that. I needed your validation.
That you got it.
Okay. Listen, the Democrats are setting their hair on fire over accused people, you know, and they're assuming that Mr. Kavanaugh is guilty. Does that same standard apply to Keith Ellison?
Great question. No, it doesn't. Nor does it apply to Ted Kennedy. Nor does it apply to Bill Clinton. I can keep going on and on and on and on. Believe the woman unless they accuse a Democrat politician.
Yeah. Actually, that leads into my next question, which is, if women are to be believed, does that include Juanita Broderick?
Joe, and you are the winner. Thank you for your call and your questions. And I will offer your validation publicly that you have offered some very good questions. Back to the phone lines we go. Next to Tennessee, where Chris is on the line. Chris, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir, Mr. Hamilton. I just wanted to say I'm extremely troubled because now I'm hearing that even if the first witness does not show up against Judge Kavanaugh tomorrow, that the hearing will proceed and then they'll decide on a vote. Well, hang on a second. What is the point of a hearing if the accuser has not shown up to face the person that she's accusing and the accused does not get to face their accuser in public? All it is just the Democrats say, okay, let's just have a hearing, and that way we can just grill him on more questions. If I was Chuck Grassley, if she does not show up, I would say, that's it. No hearing, no questions from anybody. That's it. We are proceeding to the vote because she was given a chance to make her accusations and to face him, but she didn't show up. So why is the point? Why are we having the point of any more questioning? This is absurd. Let's move to the vote.
Great, great point, Chris. And listen, and if anybody had anything to say in response to that decision, I would say go ask Dianne Feinstein. If you want to know why the Senate Judiciary Committee members were not allowed to ask questions about these allegations, you need to talk to the Democrat ranking member on the committee. I'm serious. I mean, Republicans, they play prevent defense for the entire game. It's like the kickoff happens, you receive the ball, oh, first team defense, all right, prevent. Why? What's the point of a hearing if Christine Ford doesn't show up? The hearings were over. I agree with you 100%. Back to the phone lines. We go next to Lisa. Thank you, Lisa, for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Abraham. I'm calling in as a strong woman and a powerful survivor of childhood sexual assault. And I do not believe Christine Ford's story because it happened to me at a much younger age. And I promise you, I remember every single detail of what happened. And with decades later, with good counseling, I was able to accomplish my healing in less than 6 months, and she's been in therapy for 4 years and still can't remember the details. And what my good therapy allowed me to do was to look at the person who did this to me and come to the realization this person is not a bad man. He's a good man who did a bad thing to me a long time ago. And I was able to forgive and love, and I will never be a victim again. I am a survivor. And that's what Christine Ford is maintaining herself as for years and years and years as a victim. And they need to vote on Kavanaugh because this is a snake in the grass set up. And the accusations only get more and more salacious. And the Republicans don't need to worry about how we women are going to vote. These strong and powerful women, and a lot of us have gone through this before, we know better.
Lisa, thank you so much for your call and your comments. First of all, I have to say I'm heartbroken over the fact that you suffered such an egregious violation. But I'm grateful that you were able to find healing and even got to the place where you can forgive your assailant. God bless you for that.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.